Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, brought to you by ESPN Plus, the home of UFC 248. I'm Jake Letarski, joined today, as always, by John Litterine. If you're out there on Twitter, please give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at RotoJake. Today we're going to make our fantasy picks, DFS picks for the biggest fights at UFC 248, Yoel Romero against Israel Adesanya. John, it's been a big news week and just a big month in the last time that we spoke. We spoke prior to Bones Reyes, of course, that ended in controversy. Had another outstanding fight between Paul Felder and Dan Hooker. Looks like we're getting Hooker Poirier in Sacramento coming up. That was announced today. Also, Piotr Jan against Marlon Moraes in Kazakhstan. I believe that's the first ever trip the UFC has made there. But in most recent fights, we have to look over to Norfolk and what was kind of a botched attempt to redistribute the flyweight title here. Benavidez, the fan favorite, the betting favorite. He made the weight, did everything right. Davison Figueiredo, unfortunately, did not, but still got the knockout win, and we still have a vacant flyweight title here. So what do you make of that whole situation?
You know, it's tough. Figueiredo certainly looked amazing. Like you said, Benavidez was the betting favorite, and but when you miss weight, it kind of, in a way, negates everything you did inside the octagon. This was the first time Figueiredo missed weight, but it was also the biggest fight of his career, so... when a guy looks so dominant, but he misses weight, it kind of brings into question, well, how much of that is legitimate? How much is that is due to the extra weight? You know, all that kind of stuff. But this was a division that was on life support not all that long ago. Henry Cejudo gave up his belt so these two guys can fight. And, you know, it sounds like, according to Dana White today, they're leading towards booking a rematch, which, you know, there's not a ton of options at the top of the division anyway. So, given the weight miss and all that stuff, I guess I don't really have a problem with it, but there's just a real lack of depth in the division. You know, it's nothing crazy. It's not as thin as some of the other divisions, but it's not deep. And, you know, we'll see where they go. But it sure sounds like Joseph Benavidez is going to get a fourth shot at UFC gold. He's 0-3 so far, and he did not look good on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's a real tough one, because how much do you think the inadvertent clash of heads had to do with it? Because they kind of clashed heads, and Benavidez got gashed open, and then it was basically right after that, while Benavidez was collecting himself, that Figueiredo just calculated, timed it out, and just walloped him, which was the beginning of the end there, you know, a pretty excellent
shot.
Yeah,
it was.
SC top 10. That had to have something to do with it, right?
I would think so. I mean, it was funny. It was just an accidental clash of heads right above Benavidez's eyebrow that just opened a huge, gigantic gash immediately. And not long after that, like you said, Figueiredo popped them with one straight punch, and that was it. You know, the thing that really that stood out most to me, other than how great Figueiredo looked, is how dejected Benavidez looked afterwards. He really was down in the dumps, which, you know, I can understand. Forever, this guy was viewed as the second best fighter in the division behind Demetrius Johnson. You know, DJ goes over, moves out in that Ben Askren trade, and you think, okay, well, you know, Mighty Mouse is gone, so Benavidez should be the top guy in the division, and here he is, you know, taking a fight against an opponent who comes in heavy. Obviously, he has to accept the fight anyway, and he gets walloped. So, you know, we'll see. But his body language wasn't good after the fight was over, but it sure sounds like he's going to get another shot at it.
Also, I just thought of this. The other thing from Norfolk is apparently we have a new title contender for Amanda Nunes after this. Do you have any preference there? I mean, I'm leaning strongly one way, but are you leaning the same way?
I'm leaning towards neither. But that's not going to be
Bud?
it's going to be really bad. No matter who it is, if I had to pick between the two, I would pick Spencer running away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Spencer's more deserving because she's winning the head to head.
You heard Megan Anderson's post fight interview. Mm-hmm. And remember, Anderson fought before Spencer did earlier in the night. So Anderson said, I believe Michael Bisping was doing the interviews, said, well, I deserve the title shot. I'm the only fighter in the division on a current winning streak.
That says all you need to know, right?
That's it. What do you need to know about the division if you have one fighter who's won multiple fights in a row?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, right on. So enough about the past couple weeks. We got an outstanding UFC 248 card to get ahead to. Before we jump in, I wanted to quick mention we're still running the ESPN Plus promo. Great partners over there. If you sign up for ESPN Plus through the links on our website, you get a free month of RotoWire. That's full service. So all sports, all DFS tools, just go to rotowire.com/subscribe and locate the ESPN Plus promo option on the bottom, or if you already have an account, click on subscribe now in the top right to begin. Honestly, like, this is the best time, arguably outside of, you know, the football draft season, this is the best time of the year really to sign up and start to use our RotoWire tools, because fantasy baseball draft season, go ahead and get our draft software, get all of those excellent tools, obviously NBA DFS, and of course I got to tell myself a little bit, we're doing a bunch of March Madness and college basketball content over there, so best month that you could get right now, so go ahead and you can get that for free with ESPN Plus. But John, on to the fights here. We've got a pretty excellent fight that I've been very excited for quite some time here. We've alluded to it at the beginning, but Israel Adesanya is the champion, won his belt, and will be defending his title against Yoel Romero. Adesanya on DraftKings, 9,200. Romero, 7,000. Adesanya's a -275 favorite. That's been moving a little bit back and forth, but it's pretty steady around there. Comeback on Romero, +235. And, of course, the odds to finish are -185 here. You know, John, this was closer to me than what the odds suggest, but I want to hear your take on it. I want to hear your take and your pick and who's going to come through and why.
This should be a good fight. I said in my preview column, I would prefer it out of Adesanya and Paulo Costa, but this is a good fight and I expect it to be competitive. It's interesting because Adesanya has looked great, obviously. A guy who really has kind of come out of nowhere. I mean, we knew he was a good striker, but he's a legitimately talented all-around mixed martial artist. He's 6'4". He's got real long limbs, moves well. His takedown defense, which everybody thought would be a real problem, has honestly looked good. I think some of that is just simply due to his frame and his flexibility. But he's so good of a striker that if he could just get that takedown defense to like just average, and so far and in the UFC, it's at 85%, which is, you know, outstanding. He, I think, has staying power, you know, to be.
Yeah, he's definitely someone that's going to stick around in the middleweight division for a while. Though I do think that a little bit of the takedown. Sorry about the little technical difficulty there. I was going to say, I do think a little bit of the Israel Adesanya takedown defense is a bit inflated. I mean, he fought some fighters that had no interest in taking him down, and I'll give him some credit, like the same, you know, dexterity and all these skills that make him good at evading strikes make him able to just slip out or run away or essentially evade these takedown defense or these takedown attempts from his opponents. So while 85% is an excellent above average mark in the UFC, I think Romero's a little bit different. Can you make a case for that at all, John? Like, do you buy Romero's wrestling credentials, and will Romero try to use that to his advantage?
Well, I definitely buy Romero's wrestling credentials, and, you know, if nothing else, Romero is, we've said it before, really, like, as close to a real-life superhero as you're ever going to find. The guy's 42 years old. He'll be 43 at the end of April, and he looks and moves like a guy in his mid-20s. He's just he's an unbelievable, freakish athlete. And one thing that I have found so fascinating is how he's kind of changed the way he's fought. Early in his career, his gas tank was terrible. He would go for broke early, and he wouldn't be able to stay competitive in a five-round fight in the later stages. And nowadays, he still has that explosiveness, but he's doing a much better job of picking his shots, letting fights come to him. You know, he doesn't go balls to the wall the second he steps into the octagon, and he's really been a more effective fighter because of it. It'll be interesting to see. You know, he should have a pure strength advantage, but, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that Adesanya is the better pure striker.
Yeah, you summed it up really well, John. So Romero, yeah, instead of going for broke at the beginning, he seems to calculate it. So, I mean, he'll kind of, he'll stalk, he'll, you know, maybe, land, you know, maybe work the jab a little bit, you know, not like Adesanya, but he'll stalk, and then he'll pick his moments and then go nuts in short bursts. So he's more, I guess I'll give him credit that he's more calculated with it than he was at the beginning of his career by a pretty sizable margin. So that was definitely, that's something that goes to his credit. I do like that. But overall, when it comes down to making a pick, I know anyone can see this on your preview right now, but you're going to go with the champ?
I am. You know, I don't know if I'm crazy about him at his price at 9,200. And I definitely like Romero as an underdog at 7,000. Anytime you can get a guy with Romero's athleticism for 7,000, that's always a good idea. But I will say the one thing I've been impressed with Adesanya that never really doesn't get talked about all that much is he's been hit. You know, he has taken some pops and his chin has looked strong. You know, he's really had no issues eating punishment, which is obviously a big thing nowadays. Guys eat one shot and are seemingly finished. So I'd be surprised if this isn't a competitive fight. We know how tough Romero is and some of the punishment he's taken over the years. So
there's a freeze frame of the Costa fight where Costa hit him with a head kick just flush in his head, and like you can see like you see punch face expressions that photographers will take. It was a kick face expression by Romero, and it was brutal, and how he still stayed standing is beyond me.
Yeah, Romero's one of those guys who can eat a shot like that and survive on autopilot. Like, he doesn't know where he is or anything like that, and he just keeps going, and is not only keeps going but like can like dish out return punishment and is effective,
and he's going to need to get hit, I think, to be able to really land his own. If he's going to get into Adesanya's guard, big height and reach advantages for Adesanya. If he's going to get in tight and Adesanya in his finishing phone booth range, he's going to need to take some punches to be able to close that distance.
Absolutely. There's a big height differential between the two. And that's really one of Adesanya's biggest advantages. He's 6'4" and, you know, it's kind of the John Jones thing where you can stand back and, drill guys with kicks over and over, and because you're the bigger, taller, longer guy, they can't return fire. So I'm interested to see where this goes. Like I said, Romero is as explosive as ever, but like you mentioned, he's being smarter about it. It's coming in short bursts, and it's coming when he thinks he has an opening, as opposed to earlier in his UFC career where he would just empty the gas tank immediately, regardless of the situation. And this has made him a much more effective fighter. I mean, the only thing you can say is the only real knock, like we mentioned, is this is a guy in Romero who has lost back-to-back fights. and is 1-3 in his last four fights. Should a fighter who is 1-3 in his last four fights be getting a title shot? But, you know, we talk about that all the time in regards to who gets title shots and who doesn't. And it's kind of, honestly, it's kind of random. So that,
well, and I do have to mention that Romero for his, the interim title against Rockhold, he missed weight.
Yeah.
And for the second Robert Whittaker fight, which, you know, I kind of thought he won that fight. He lost the split decision. Very, very close fight. He also missed weight for that one, or was it the first? Well, he missed weight for one of the Whittaker fights, so he'll be one to definitely watch on the scales. I know Ariel Helwani said that he said that he weighed 198 pounds on Monday, which is about 4 pounds less than a typical fight week. So it seems like his weight should be relatively safe, but you'll definitely want to watch this one on the scales a little bit. But when it all comes down to it, I got to pick Romero in this one. I just think that the power is there. Obviously, Adesanya has power too. But the biggest thing that I'm seeing is that Romero's wrestling is just going to come into play here. And I know he took Whittaker down 3 times, or he took Whittaker down 7 times in the fights, in those first 2 fights combined. But and of course, he didn't necessarily win. But I think the Adesanya takedown defense numbers a little bit inflated, because he's never truly faced someone, a wrestler, the caliber of Romero before. I think he's going to be able to go for that midsection and squeeze and just drive through. That's not something that, you know, Kelvin Gastelum, a former welterweight, would be able to do. Adesanya just hasn't seen an opponent that can go through and just drag him to the ground like Romero can. Now, will that be a part of his game plan? It isn't always. We don't know for sure about that. Could Romero eat a knee coming in? He absolutely could. But I think this fight's a lot closer than the betting odds suggest, and it's enough for me to go ahead and pick Romero in this one.
Yeah, I definitely agree with it being closer than the odds would dictate. I'm all over Romero as an underdog DK play, but I'm going to take Adesanya by decision in what I expect to be a competitive fight.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely gotten my underdogs from the pay-per-view card. That's a little bit of a foreshadowing as we go into the next fight. Oh, the other thing, I had this down in my notes. I didn't mention it yet, but there's that recent Israel Adesanya video. I don't know if you saw that from Combat TV. He had some pretty bad staph infection on his elbow, claims it's not going to affect his training, not going to affect anything at all. But, you know, just another reason if you're looking to find a way for Romero or rationalize using him at 7,000. Just another one. Now, I don't know. I've seen that on guys like Kevin Lee, and, you know, you see it a decent amount. To what degree it affects these fighters, you know, there's nothing that can prove any of that. But, you know, just another thing to watch out for here. But I want to get to the other title fight here on this card. We've got the Women's Strawweight Championship. Wiley Zhang, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Wiley Zhang is the big favorite after getting the big knockout to become champion against Jessica Andrade in her home country of China. So minus 170 favorite, comeback on Joanna, plus 150. DraftKings salaries match up with that a little bit. Wiley Zhang is actually cheaper than the champion in the main event. Zhang, 8,900 on DraftKings. Joanna, 7,300 on DraftKings. And the odds to finish, I don't know, Vegas seems to think, or at least the books that are offering it, seems to think that plus 115, this fight will see the judges here. Zhang only four fights in the UFC. So she's relatively new to the game. It's basically like the new guard versus the old guard here. But how do you see this one playing out, John?
You know, this is kind of a what have you done for me lately type deal. Zhang looked unbelievable in her win over Jessica Andrade, 42-second knockout in her native China, obviously won the belt. And this is really goes back to kind of what we just talked about with Romero in regards to how the UFC books who gets title shots. Joanna is coming off a win over Michelle Waterson, a unanimous decision win where, you know, she looked good, but, you know, I didn't think she looked brilliant, certainly not as dominant as she did, you know, in her early UFC run.
She was credited with 180 significant strikes to Waterson's 458.
Right, but so Waterson's not very good.
That's something. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Waterson's good. She's just
not at strawweight. She's really an atom weight. But my point was, Joanna is still 2-3 in her last 5 fights. I mean, granted, 2 of those losses were the title fights to Rose Namajunas, and the other one was to Valentina Shevchenko at flyweight, which, you know, there's no woman at 125 pounds on the planet who's going to beat Valentina Shevchenko anytime soon. So, you know, that is what it is. But my biggest concern about Joanna is we all know what a Muay Thai specialist she is and how good she is on the feet. And early in her UFC career, she seemed to have such a big advantage in that area. She would just destroy opponents on the feet. I remember, you know, the Valerie Letourneau fight and, you know, Jessica, that, what she did to Jessica Penne, that was, you know, brutal. And it seems as this, as we've gone on here and, you know, some new fighters have been added to the division and stuff, it seems, I don't know if Joanna's slipping or if the competition level is getting better, so, you know, her skills aren't as evident, but she just doesn't seem to have as much of an advantage on the feet and been as effective as she did earlier in her UFC run. Now, look, if you want to say she has a couple things going for her in this fight, $7,300 is a really cheap salary for a lady who, you know, not all that long ago was viewed as one of the better fighters in the world. And the sample size on Zhang, like you said, is really small. She only has 3 fights in the company. And other than the Andrade fight, you know, never really beat anybody all that good. It's just, I think there's a real difference in power in the striking game. Joanna is a talented striker, but she's more volume in combinations. I think Zhang has legitimate fight-altering power. And in what is expected to be a kickboxing match, I think that's the difference. I think this is a bad matchup for Joanna, but again, her salary's cheap and you're looking at, you know, the small sample size here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with you that the differentiator and the reason that Zhang is the favorite and the higher salary DraftKings fighter and so on is the perceived or realistic, whatever way you want to look at it, the difference in power. Because I think Zhang has the power to finish this in with a couple of shots, and Joanna, I'm not necessarily sure here. But at the same time, before I go in and, you know, announce my pick for this fight, I just want to say that Joanna at 7,300, I wrote down in my notes here, even with the step up in competition and facing all the elite fighters that the division has to offer, Joanna's career is 6.22 significant strikes landed per minute in her UFC career. And Vegas thinks this fight will go to a decision. So -145 is the, will it see the judges, you know, +115 odds of the finish. So Vegas thinks that it'll see the start of the fourth, fifth. All of these are minus money here. So Vegas thinks the fight goes to a decision, you know, 6 significant strikes per minute, you know, times 25 minutes. Suddenly that's a damn good DraftKings score for 7,300, whether you're getting a decision bonus or not in this situation. And I think that Joanna's going to be a little bit back to her normal self here. She's got the 2-inch height advantage. She's got the 2-inch reach advantage. She's got an opponent that had, you know, very favorable circumstances in her home country against a much more reasonable matchup here. Was able to win the belt. Congratulations. Don't want to knock her too much. She's got 2 finishes and 4 UFC fights. Weili Zhang has been spectacular. And maybe one day Weili Zhang takes the belt back from Joanna, if they were to do a rematch or whatever they want to do with this. But I think I got Joanna, and I got Joanna via decision here. It just comes down to me, is can she avoid the power shot? Because if they fight for a full 25 minutes, I don't think there's any way in my mind that Zhang can outpoint her, you know, when it comes to the eyes of the judges. And this is Vegas, so these guys know, you know, we're not messing around. We're not in Houston where, you know, where judging can get a little weird or whatever here. So I think this is Joanna's fight. I think people are underestimating Joanna, maybe not giving her enough credit for the wild stretch that she was on prior to this 2-3 run. And even if she doesn't win, she just poses to be an excellent DraftKings play. I think between the name recognition and just her volume striking, she's going to be one of the highest usage players on DraftKings. And the other thing is hey, I'm starting my lineup with Romero and Joanna, and then I can pick whoever the heck I want, basically, which is fantastic. I'll take 4 more betting favorites and call it a day from there here. So I struggled with this one a little bit, watching Zhang in these open workouts where she's just destroying these pads and knocking her pad holder down with kicks. That got me a little bit scared, but I still think I'm going Joanna via decision, which, by the way, no sports betting in Wisconsin yet, so, you know, I can't say exactly, but +205, Joanna by decision. I think that's a pretty good bet. +205, getting that at plus money, but maybe that's just me here. Anything else to tell me I'm crazy, John?
I don't agree with you, but I wouldn't say you're crazy. you know, I go back to the 2 Rose Namajunas fights, and really really the second one in Brooklyn, where it's just Rose, who is not known for her striking. Rose is a pure ground wrestler. You know, ground, you know, takedown submission game. Rose, a ground fighter, and she just destroyed Joanna on the feet in that fight. And ever since then, I've just, I don't know, I'm skeptical. You know, Joanna looked better against Tisha Torres. I'm throwing the Shevchenko fight out because that was at a different weight class against a fighter nobody's beating. So, you know, that is what it is. But the wins over Tisha Torres and Michelle Waterson, she looked good. But I don't see her at the same level she was earlier in her UFC career. And, you know, it's kind of at the point where, for me, it's going to take multiple strong performances for her to, like, if she rolls over Zhang and wins the title, right? And then whoever's next in line, who she defends it, you know, I'm still not going to be totally back in as a buyer until I see two or three really strong efforts in a row.
Yeah, you know, and it might be fair to wonder if, you know, she's 32 years old now, be 33 this summer. Is she starting to turn the corner on the athletic prime? That's certainly a possibility. But I don't think we've seen the last of Joanna, and I think we see her in Vegas. You know, this isn't in China. This is in Vegas, where, I mean, I guess Weili Zhang has had success in Vegas before, so I don't want to let the location go too much. But I don't know. I think she's getting the belt back, and win or lose, I think 7,300 is a fantastic.
That part I definitely agree with. She's definitely a good play to fill out your lineup if you need, you know, need a cheap play to try and make some favorites work.
Yeah, you know, I was doing some DraftKings builds early, and, you know, some of them I'm leaving $1,500 on the table, and I think that has to be your way of thinking if you're going to try to take down a GPP.
Yeah,
if you're going to try to – the $15 one where that's given a $50,000 top prize here, the throwdown, you got to do something a little unique, and you got to – you know, there could very easily be 3-4 dogs in the winning GPP lineups.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those GPP lineups are almost always won by somebody who leaves cash on the table because it's going to take some kind of crazy combination that nobody sees coming. I actually think Joanna's probably a better cash play only because she's popular and she's going to be so owned. You know, we talked about a couple pay-per-views ago. We talked about, was it Conor McGregor and Shevchenko on the same card where, you know, the difference in salaries compared to the difference in the Vegas odds, because McGregor's the most popular fighter in the world, he's going to be so owned. You know, Joanna, despite her recent struggles or whatever, is 100 million times more well-known among casual fans than Zhang is. So unless you have the entire population of China using Zhang in their DraftKings lineups, Joanna's going to be highly owned.
I'm pretty sure it is not allowed in China right now.
No, I wouldn't think
But who knows? Anyway, let's move on here. So we could probably go back and forth. It's good to have a little disagreement here, a little devil's advocate. I don't have the results of staff picks in. We'll see what's going on tomorrow to see how split we actually are. But we'll move on to the rest of the pay-per-view, then maybe discuss a few upsets here. I want to talk a lightweight matchup here between Beneil Dariush and Dakar Close. Dariush is 8,700, Close is 7,500. Dariush -170, Close +150. Odds to finish are +100. John, what's your take on this one?
I'm taking Dariush here. Nothing too crazy. This is an interesting fight to me because they're kind of opposite in styles. Dariush is really slow and methodical, and that's really kind of hurt him in the past. It takes them a little while to get warmed up, and you know, he just kind of lets fights come to him and counters and lets his opposition make mistakes, which is a good way to fight. But the problem is, if you're waiting in a 3-round fight, which is so short, you know, that could cost you on the judges' scorecards. Their difference between the two is Close is really, really uber aggressive. Aggressive at times to the point of recklessness, which I think kind of plays into what Dariush is trying to do. Dariush just sits back, lets his opposition lead the dance a lot, and then pounces when he sees an opening. I actually think he's probably Close would probably be better suited to sit back himself and just see where this fight goes, but that's just not the way he fights. So when you take that into consideration, combined with the fact that I'm not really totally convinced in Close's power either. He has, I believe it's 4 career wins via knockout, but they all came early on the regional circuit. He doesn't have one since August of 2015. So once he moved on to the UFC and the competition level got better, Close's power has essentially evaporated. So I like Dariush. You know, he's been around a while, and I always thought he was kind of underrated. You know, he's lost pretty much the majority of the big fights he's been in his career, but he's always been able to
Yeah, I'm with you there on Dariush. I think he's a guy that I'm going to go ahead and pick as well. You know, the statistics kind of lean.
James Vick, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we're looking
yeah,
at
the, he's yeah. beaten some good guys. He beat Jim Miller back when Jim Miller was good. Anthony Rocco Martin, mm-hmm. you know, he has some wins. So I'm taking yep. Dariush here. Nothing too fancy. I just think as long as he doesn't – as long as he isn't passive enough to let the fight pass him by, I think he should win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on here. I'm with you here. I'm looking through Dariush's resume. By the way, sorry about the slight technical glitch a moment ago here. Just a connection thing, but we're back now. Let's see here. So we've got, Edson Barboza, Michael Chiesa, those guys that Dariush has lost to have been, you know, pretty top flight guys in the division, and I'm just not sure Dracar Close is that. So, you know, given the caliber of competition between the two of them and the fact that I agree with you in that Dariush is probably a more complete all-around fighter, plus he's riding the three-fight winning streak. He's got the edge in, you know, the striking numbers are actually very close, but Dariush gets hit quite a bit less. Grappling numbers definitely lean in the favor of Dariush. Slight height, slight reach advantage. I think this one's Dariush's fight, and I'm just because, like you said, it would be wise for them to kind of wait back, and that's kind of how Dariush is. 8,700 is quite a bit for a guy who you expect to maybe wait back and counter strike, and then see this fight probably go to a decision. So while I'm seeing Dariush fit into a lot of these DraftKings lineups, I'm not quite sure I'm going to follow through and use him necessarily.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm not that interested in Close as an underdog either, because at 7,500, the price isn't crazy. But if you're not a real believer mm-hmm. in his power, it's hard to believe he's going to outpoint Dariush. So at that point, you know, the sense in using him doesn't make a ton of sense to use him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely probably a fade to both of us, because you know how I mentioned this. Like I said, okay, throw your Romero, throw your Jacek in, and then you can take pretty much whatever four betting favorites you want. If you want the -800 Vieira or whatever, I've got Dariush in here in a line. So say you start with those two, and then you go Vieira, Dariush, Lee, and O'Malley. Then you're at $0 left. I don't think that's going to win a GPP, so I'm probably moving Dariush out for somebody else, at least in the A lineup. We'll see how that goes here. But let's keep going down the line here. We got Neil Magny, Li Jing Liang. Magny 7,600 on DraftKings. Leech coming back at 8,600. Li is a -165 favorite. Magny comeback +145. Odds of finish -130. So we think this fight might get stopped here. Magny, the big thing with him is he's been out for 476 days due to kind of a USADA suspension here. Lee's been kind of hot in the meantime here. Are you buying the Leech hype, John?
I am here. I think Lee's actually really good, and I think he's being severely underrated simply because this is a guy who really hasn't fought in the United States much. Last fought in the U.S. in January 2017. Since then, he's fought three times in China, twice in Singapore, and once in Australia. So you're looking at six fights since he last fought in the United States. And as we've talked about on here before, guys who fight on European cards or overseas in Asia often get underlooked simply because, you know, to be perfectly honest, those Far East cards just don't get the eyeballs that some of the United States cards get. It's always mm-hmm. been like that. And not only do I think Li is good, Li has legitimate power. He's a good fighter. He's underrated on the mat. There's got an all-around game, and he's durable. You know, Magny's game isn't really knocking his opponents out, but Li's never been knocked out in his 12-year career. I think Li's good. I'd like to see him fight more in the United States. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to find quality matchups in those overseas cards. You can't find opponents who really want to fly to the other side of the world, you know, to fight. So mm-hmm. we'll see where that goes for Li. And I'm kind of out on Magny. Look, he had a nice run from February 2014 to August 2016. He went 10-1, which for a guy.
With all due respect, though, you were out on him like at the beginning of that run, too. You've never been sold on Magny.
I haven't.
So I just want to throw that out
there. Pretty much basically what's happened with Magny recently is what I thought was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the knockout loss.
Really well, but he's always been really good at tailoring his game plan to whoever he's facing. You know how we talk all the time about guys who are stuck in a rut and refuse to change the way they fight depending on their opponent? That's not Magny. Magny's willing to mix it up depending on who he's fighting in order to be successful, and that's really helped him over the years, but he's definitely trending in the wrong direction. when you take that into consideration, combined with the long layoff, you know, I think Lee is a clear pick here, and I actually kind of like Lee at the salary. I don't think 8,600 is insane, especially if you're in the boat like you are, where you know you're on Romero and Joanna. You know, I think Lee at 8,600 is not horrible. And you know, going back to Magny quick to finish up, Magny could never win another fight in his UFC career, and I think it would still be termed a rousing success. You know, this was a guy who, the first time I ever saw him fight, you know, in New Jersey, was on the opening card of opening fight of the card, and he was a nobody. And you know, that I believe, I want to say that was the first fight of his 10-1 streak. So Magny has had a successful run, no matter what happens the rest of the way. And the only thing I really disagree with regarding the odds and salaries and stuff here is, I would put the odds of a finish not at -130. I think this fight has a better chance of going the distance than Vegas does. But other than that, everything else seems about right.
Well, fortunately, you out in Jersey can get on the DK Sportsbook and go ahead and make that bet.
Yeah, so, but I'm in New York.
Something there. Oh, you're in New York?
Yeah.
How far is it to drive across state lines? Is that even worth
it? Not too far. It's like an hour and a half. It's not worth it.
Oh, jeez. Okay, rough. All right.
And besides, Magny's killed me so much over the years, he'd win. So,
of course he would. Yes, exactly. Yeah, so that's the thing. Outside of your disdain for Magny, or at least disdain for picking Magny for the last 5 years that we've done this, I think he's been a little bit underrated. Now, the layoff here, that certainly is the biggest concern for me. But I'm trying to look at Lee's record here. Obviously, the Zaleski Dos Santos win was excellent. You know, that's a very quality win. But I don't know, man. I can't pick out another quality win off that fight log here. So I think the record's getting inflated a little bit. Obviously, Magny, like most welterweights, he's going to come in with that massive height and reach advantage. I think it'll be tough for Lee to get inside on him. And while Lee has the higher striking volume statistically, the striking defense is superior for Magny, and the grappling numbers are far superior for Magny. I mean, Magny's losses, Ponzinibbio, hits hard. Rafael Dos Santos, we all know what he's capable of. And then, you know, Magny, I guess, you know, you could say the same thing about some of his wins, Condic, Hendricks, maybe guys that are washed up. But, no, I don't know. I think Magny can get it done here. But this isn't one that I'd be putting my money where my mouth is on DraftKings, because I agree with you in a sense that I don't see Magny getting a super high DraftKings score, even in a win. So I'm leaning towards Magny on the pick here for those couple of reasons. You know, maybe I'm falling a little bit victim to what you suggested earlier with that, the Eastern European not having as much as exposure. Maybe I haven't watched as much Lee as I should here. But no, I think I'm going Magny with this one. And I don't expect a lot of other people to be on Magny in our staff picks. So I'm hoping, you know, at least part of the reason, maybe I can pick up a point on the rest of you guys here. But I'm going to go with the longer established record and someone who's definitely going to be hungry after that USADA layoff here. So he could get knocked out, but he could do Neil Magny things and surprise us like usual. So that's the direction I'm going to lean in. And I think, let's see here, we've agreed on one and we've disagreed on three so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, that's got to be a new one for us. It makes for more entertaining shows.
I imagine the staff picks, maybe not with Magny, but at least with the first couple are probably going to be all over the place. I could see normally the staff picks are whatever they are, 5-1 or unanimous or whatever. You might get something a little different here.
Yeah, for sure. I won't reveal who it is until tomorrow morning when I post here, but I know one other person besides me has picked Romero, so we've got that going for us. So we'll kind of see there. One more pay-per-view fight to talk about. This is an interesting one. You noted it in your preview, John, and I was I had to really dig deep to try to find some kind of meaningful analysis to rationalize my pick here. It gets really tough. Alex Oliveira, Max Griffin, Oliveira 8,400, Griffin 7,800, Oliveira -150, Griffin +130, odds to finish. Basically a pick 'em. Interesting fight for the first round of the pay-per-view, but I do understand ESPN lately, since the movement, they've tried to keep at least one good fight on the prelim card that they show on ESPN to kind of draw people in to buy the pay-per-view. So I think with that strategy, we end up getting fights like this to open up the pay-per-view cards. So I'm definitely there's no need to be there right at 9:05 to hear Face the Pain and catch this one, but I don't know. Could be a different, indecent fight nonetheless. I mean, matchmakers do try to get people drawn in here a little bit. So I don't know. I guess, how do you see this fight playing? I guess what I'm saying is, like you, this fight doesn't do a whole lot for me. But Oliveira Griffin, we got to make a pick. How's this one
going? Yeah, I don't think this fight does a lot for a whole lot of people. You know, these are two guys who have combined to go 2-7 in their last 9 fights, which is pretty hard to believe that that's what's opening up a pay-per-view. The one thing I will say is this does have a chance to be a pretty entertaining fight. It has no impact whatsoever on anything in the long run as far as title implications or top 10 or contenders or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's possible, as I wrote in my preview article, there's a chance both of these guys are fighting for their jobs, which should make it, you know, somewhat entertaining, at least from a fan's perspective. This is a weird fight, and it's one where I'd probably stay away from it altogether if possible. Oliveira has been interesting. You know, he's beaten Carlos Condit. I remember he beat Will Brooks, but he's a guy who he has value because he fights a lot and he can fight in different weight classes. And in a sport where
what I think you're going for there is a sport where we got to have an event every single weekend because we're in the midst of a 8-weekend stretch there. Whoops, sorry.
Yeah, there's essentially a fight every card every week. So when you have a guy who fights all the time and fights in multiple weight classes, he has value. And Griffin is getting a shot on a main card of a pay-per-view despite being 3-6 with the company. He's 2-5 in his last 7 fights. All of them have gone via decision. And Griffin is kind of like Jakar Close in a sense where he's really just an uber-aggressive brawler. He just doesn't do it as well. Griffin's actually pretty durable. For a guy who fights his style of fighting, the only time he's been knocked out in his career was by Colby Covington. And we all know Covington's not really a big knockout guy. But
6 decisions in a row for Griffin.
In today's day and age, where you have referees stopping fights for nothing, as we saw last week, you don't see that very often.
We could do a whole show on that.
I think Oliveira is probably the better fighter. Actually, I'm confident he's the better fighter. A bit more well-rounded, bit more power, but I'm not confident enough in Cowboy Oliveira in the early days of 2020 to make a stand on this either way. I'm going to pick Oliveira to win, but there's enough known quantities on this card that I'd probably just stay away from this in all facets if possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that tier's not super attractive, like the 83 to 8700 on Drago. Well, Dariush, I mean, not super attractive from a scoring standpoint, but from a think he's going to win standpoint. But otherwise, in that 83 to 8700, there's Lee, who I know you like. Emmers gets in there, and another relative unknown, Darren Wynn. I don't see that fight being super high scoring. So this whole tier in general is part of the reason. Why, you know, going to be money left on the table here in this one. But I don't know, when I looked into this, watched the recent fights for these guys, I don't know. It's just, for me, it's Cowboy gets hit generally a lot less and is going to be much more of a factor in the grappling department if it ever gets there. That was enough to flip me in the direction of Oliveira, but not crazy confident about it, and just, and I don't know, overall, just not one
this is kind of just one of those fights where, you know, you tune in, and obviously if you're watching the pay-per-view, you're tuning in anyway. You know, you kind of hope it's just an entertaining fight from like a fan perspective, and then you just leave it at that, because, you know, there's a very good chance the loser is going to end up getting cut anyway. And obviously, no matter who wins, Oliveira could steamroll Griffin in 20 seconds, and it still has no impact on any title contention or top 10 lists or whatever. So it is what it is. You know, the UFC is probably put at this point, one, like you said, because they want to try and get a big name on the prelims with ESPN now. And two, because it could be an action-packed fight, which is really, you know, to get the crowd pumped up for the bigger fights later in the card.
Right on. So that's going to wrap things up for the main card here. Before we sign off, want to talk a couple of upset plays. I mean, obviously, if you buy into my logic at all, my DraftKings lineups are going to score 600 points. They're going to score 100 points this weekend. There's going to be very little in between the way that this is shaping up for me. So we're going to go ahead and risk it all and see what happens here. But, you know, if you're not with me on those upsets, you got to take a look at some potential other upsets on the card here. Anyone that stand out to you in particular?
I mean, you know, it's funny. There was like, for this whole card, really, there was a bunch of fighters where I was looking at it and I thought, you know, I'm not going to pick them to win, but I think they kind of have a chance. I think the guy who stood out most to me probably as an underdog to straight up win was Guido Canetti, who was at 8,000. Again, that's not much of a price savings. He's plus 120 in the Vegas odds, which is, you know, very, very, you know, minimal. And he's 40 years old. So betting against the guy who's 40 years old and has alternated wins and losses in his last four fights, you know, is not a huge recipe for.
Yeah. I want to throw one more upset out there that I think has a potential chance. You know, I caught this from one of our colleagues on Twitter. But the guy that I want to draw at least a little bit of attention to in this case is Austin Hubbard. Now I know Mark Madsen looked like a crazy world beater when he came out and crushed Belwardo. I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong, but Mark Madsen came in with a lot of hype. But Mark Madsen's 35 years old, and I don't know if I'd necessarily see it against Hubbard, giving up a little bit of height. Hubbard is more, I would think, more all around. Obviously, the much younger guy. And just following the money too. Madsen opened at a minus 750 favorite, probably in reaction to what he did in his last fight. But he's down at about minus 245 right now, and he could close around minus 200. So I'm not necessarily sure I'd advocate using Hubbard on DraftKings, but in the situation where I described, where you can pick four betting favorites, I don't think Madsen's going to be one of them.
I don't know. He won an Olympic silver medal. Those betting against those guys scare me.
Yeah, that's tough. I guess so. You know, he's only had the other thing is what is he only had like
I think he's had nine around there.
Nine pro fights at the age of 35.
He'll be 36 in September. So.
Yeah, nine pro fights at the age of 35 scares me a little bit. Like, obviously, he looked amazing in that first fight. You know, got the first round knockout. But then, you know, you go back to the Cage Warriors, and he's got three consecutive decisions here. Like, can he? Excellent wrestler, of course, but you know, can he? We'll see here if his MMA game is well rounded enough at the age of 35. Because we've talked about this before. You know, that's kind of no taking away from him what a wrestler he is, but that's a little late to really get going in the MMA game. So again, I'm not saying I'm going to come out and pick up Austin Howard as an upset pick necessarily. Maybe Madsen could win, but I'm a little shakier on Madsen than I am on the other favorites. I guess that's
I like Emily Whitmire too. More because more because I don't like Pollyanna Viana because she's lost her last three fights against subpar competition. But again, you know, that's, I believe what they're, I think they're both 8,100. So, you know, you're not saving anything there. I mean, you know, it's funny. It's, you can make a case for a lot of these underdogs, but like I said, not to the point where you want to pick them outright. But, you know, maybe you could throw them in your lineup if you have some favorites you definitely want to use to just round it out. You know, it's an interesting card. It's fairly thin once you get past the first two or three fights in regards to names that are popular with casual fans. Like once you get past O'Malley on the prelims, you know, there are very, very few fighters any casual fan is going to ever have will have ever heard of. Yeah. But
I could see casual fans maybe even forgetting about O'Malley a little bit. I mean, yeah, he's got his own marketable type things, but he last fought in March of 2018. There was a lot of USADA questions in there, and now he's finally back, and he's got a lot to prove too. So that's one of the ones I'm very.
He does have a lot to prove, and it's funny. He's a guy who, I don't know. I'm not totally sold on. I know he gets pumped up a lot and stuff, but.
Yeah, we've talked about O'Malley a little bit before. Definitely someone that's a little more slight of build, I guess. Of course, it's a smaller division here. What we've got
the time away and everything. I'm not totally in on him yet. He needs to show me a little more before I think he's like a legitimate contender.
All right. Well, before Skype stops cooperating with us anymore, that'll wrap it up. I think there are plenty of ways to go ahead and build DraftKings lineups in here. You know, mass enter these. Give the quarter jukebox a try if you want to try entering 10-20 lineups just to see what it's like. Because really taking control of the variance is how you win in MMA DFS here. I've got my GPP angles. I might be crazy. John's probably the rational ones this week, but I'll stick to my guns anyway. We'll wrap things up with that though. Thanks again for listening to RotoWire Mixed Martial Martial Arts Podcast. Again, brought to you by ESPN Plus, the home of UFC 248. If you haven't jumped on board by now for the Conor and Bones fights, get on board for this one, because this is one that the pay-per-view numbers maybe aren't going to be so hot, but these two title fights do a whole lot for me, and I'm very excited to see them. Once again, give John a follow at JonLitterIne. Check out his free preview on rotowire.com. You can go to rotowire.com/pod. That's rotowire.com/pod for a free 10-day trial to the website. No strings attached. Get your baseball, get your NBA, get your college basketball, get everything good to go. I'm Jake Litarski. You can follow me at RotoJake. John and I will be back with you guys prior to UFC 249. That's Khabib versus Tony Ferguson, provided, you know, there's no coronavirus, there's no crazy weather, there's no tripping on cables in the parking lot.
Yeah,
we might get to see Khabib and Tony in April. Yes, exactly. Keeping those fingers crossed until then. Well, thanks for joining me, John. It's been a pleasure, and best of luck to you guys listening. Hope we get a winner of that 50K here, and enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the fights.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.